visited me in various states across the years, and I was so honored to officiate at her wedding. But I did something to her in elementary school for which I am ashamed. I was unkind about her, behind her back. And the reason I've assigned her a false name today, instead of asking her permission to tell this small story here with her real name, is that until the service yesterday, I have never breathed a word to her or anyone else about this important incident in our friendship. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Caitlin had a habit of describing in detail her frequent and creative dreams. Maybe she was sometimes too specific, although I recall waxing poetically to her about all sorts of subjects that couldn't have been particularly fascinating, like that my parents wouldn't let me pierce my ears and how much I disliked a teacher. I'm not sure I was overly entitled to judge. Anyway, I once found myself in the company of two other girls from school. You have to understand, these were not just any girls. They were 1 year ahead, making them fifth graders and at the top of the social hierarchy at Maplewood Elementary School. They were cool. They liked me fine, but I knew that if I could just get in good with them, then they would like me even more, maybe even as much as I liked them. I have no idea how the subject arose, but I made fun of Caitlin behind her back to them, even doing an impression of her going on and on about some random dream. They laughed, and then the conversation drifted into other areas. I hung out with them all recess, a sweet victory. By the next day, I felt terrible. I knew I had done something mean, but I didn't know what to do about it. See, I was a good Unitarian Universalist kid. I didn't have to worry about hellfire or any kind of big eternal misery that would come to me if I did wrong, because my understanding of God never included divine wrathful punishment. At the First Unitarian Church of Portland, Oregon, I was taught that I was good inside, decent at the core, fundamentally worthy. Yet when I was in fourth grade and this incident with Caitlin happened, Unitarian Universalism failed me. It had long assured me that I was wonderful and good, no matter what. And then when I realized that my behavior had not been good or wonderful, it had nothing to say. I pondered this for years, but silently, so no one would know my shortcoming. I was always left with this question: if people are spiritually good, why didn't I behave better? I don't mean to overstate the magnitude of what I did. I didn't physically hurt anyone. And now I even understand that it's part of a child's healthy development to experiment within reason about how it feels to treat people well or poorly. I bet $1 million that my friend Caitlin would giggle uncontrollably at this story now. But if it had gotten back to her at the time, she would have been crushed. If our roles had been reversed, I would have been unspeakably wounded. We were best friends. This was also when I was learning in school and at home about the global and historical worst of human behavior, the Jewish Holocaust, genocide of Native Americans, enslavement of Africans and African Americans, destruction of the earth and her many forms of life. If all people contain good in them, I was left to ponder, doesn't that mean they are supposed to act like it? And what is to be done if they don't? What should I do if I don't? To be honest, Unitarian Universalism has recover from bad behavior. People I know who have grown up Unitarian Universalist, but then left it for other faith traditions, have even cited this shortcoming as a reason why they needed to find another spiritual path. Here is why I think this is a weakness. Ours is a religious tradition of come-iners, meaning that we are a community where more people have chosen us of their free will, and fewer have grown up within our embrace like I did. It's a blessing to be in a movement where people wish to join. If this describes your journey, then welcome. Thank you for being here. You bring so many gifts, and it's not always easy to depart from the familiar and to try something new. But let's look a little more closely at who's here and at what that might mean. Of the people who come to us by choice, we're finding that more and more were raised secular and don't identify with any particular religious tradition. And in addition, we also know that a healthy minority is from a tradition other than Christianity, like my father, who came from Judaism. The majority of Unitarian Universalists in the past and today come from some form or interpretation of Christianity. Unitarian Universalism itself has Christian DNA. A central Christian belief has long been the idea of original sin, which is that humanity as a whole has sinned simply by being human. Not all Christian communities believe this uncritically, of course, but it's an idea that's prevalent, and it's been a very real deal breaker for many people who leave Christianity, some of whom make their way to Unitarian Universalism. In rejecting original sin, many Unitarian Universalist come-iners, including many folks here, I know, have found great meaning and relief in the idea that we are not fundamentally wicked. Instead, each of us has inherent worth and dignity. That's what it says in our principles. Yet as a result, this focus on our goodness can sometimes overshadow the reality that our behavior can be less than good, even bad. Okay, so I've called out my beloved faith tradition, criticized it in front of you all with the full knowledge that this is being recorded. But never fear, I have a suggestion about what I think could help strengthen this weakness. Recent psychological research. Poe Bronson, a journalist for the New York Magazine, will give us a good introduction to these psychological findings. He has written about the idea that too much of a focus on who you are, like if you're good or smart or any other positive quality, can sometimes be less helpful than concentrating on the importance of trying hard in life. He calls this the inverse power of praise, and he uses the story of a child he's called Thomas to make his case. Since Thomas could walk, he heard constantly that he's smart. His intelligence was statistically confirmed when an IQ test gained him admittance to a school reserved for the top 1% of all applicants. But the self-awareness that he's smart didn't necessarily translate into fearless confidence or mastery. In fact, Thomas's father noticed the exact opposite. Thomas didn't want to try things he wouldn't be successful at, reported his father. Some things came very quickly to him, but when they didn't, he gave up almost immediately, concluding, "I'm not good at this." In third grade, Thomas was supposed to learn cursive penmanship, but he wouldn't even try. Thomas's father tried to reason with him. "Look, just because you're smart doesn't mean you don't have to put out some effort." This phenomenon caught the attention of psychologists researchers to New York to take individual children out of their fifth grade classrooms for nonverbal IQ tests consisting of a series of puzzles. Puzzles easy enough that all the children would do fairly well. Once the children finished, researchers told each student their score and gave a single line of praise. Some were praised for their intelligence. You must be smart at this. Other students were praised for effort. You must have worked really hard. The students got to pick their next test. One would be more difficult than the first, but the researchers told the kids that they would learn a lot from attempting it. The other choice, Dweck's team explained, was an easy test. Here's what's interesting. Of those praised for their effort, 90% chose the harder test. Of those praised for their intelligence, a majority chose the easier set of puzzles. The smart kids took the cop-out. So, why? When we praise children for their intelligence, Dweck wrote in her study summary, we tell them that this is the name of the game. Look smart. Don't risk making mistakes. And that's what the fifth graders had done. They'd chosen to look smart and avoid the risk of being embarrassed. In my own elementary school days, had I done something similar by trying to avoid the embarrassment of being seen as bad? In the next round of Dweck's research, none of the fifth graders had a choice. The test was difficult. Everyone failed. But again, the two groups responded differently. Those praised for their effort on that first test assumed they simply hadn't focused hard enough. They got very involved, willing to try every solution to the puzzles, Dweck recalled. Many of them remarked, unprovoked, "This is my favorite test." Not so for those praised for their smarts. They assumed their failure was evidence that they weren't really smart at all. Dweck said, just watching them, you could see the strain. They were sweating and miserable. From the get-go, Dweck had suspected that praise could backfire, but even she was surprised by the magnitude of the effect. Emphasizing effort gives a child a variable that they can control, she explains. They come to see themselves as in control of their success. Emphasizing natural intelligence takes it out of the child's control, and it provides no good recipe for responding to a failure. In my own childhood, making fun of my friend behind her back was a failure. Unitarian Universalism didn't provide me with a good recipe for responding to it. None of this research tells me that our faith tradition is wrong. I still believe that each person has a clear, beautiful spark of fundamental decency in them. And I still believe that even when I learn about the most terrible people who undoubtedly did hideous things. Yet as a kid, I missed an important, subtle point. I don't think our theology actually says that everyone is all good in the sense of we all behave well at all times. As an adult, I understand nuance better. Now, some Unitarian and Universalist theologians across the years have said that people can and should always be wonderful. But most have not been that out of touch. Most have rejected the idea that we're perfect, believing instead that, sure, we're flawed, we're capable of wrongdoing, because we're human, but that at our core, we also always contain intrinsic goodness. should keep trying to be good, and that it's never a losing battle, and that we shouldn't worry too much if it's hard, that the best, most worthwhile struggles can often be difficult. Intelligence, which is the subject of Dweck's work, isn't the same thing as goodness, which is the subject of my personal story about Caitlin. Goodness and intelligence are different, but they are both qualities that are often assumed to be innate, when in fact, both benefit immensely from effort. Being good or smart is great, but what's even greater is our capacity to keep trying. Instead of taking as our role model Thomas with the high IQ, let's remember Abby, the heroine of our reading today. She was a real person. Keep the Lights Burning, Abby was written by fellowship members Peter and Connie Roop, and it's based on Abby Burgess's own accounts of her life. She and her family lived on Matinicus Rock, which is off the coast of Maine. When Captain Burgess went after desperately needed supplies, this is in 1856, he left Abby in charge. A tremendous storm came up, lasting 4 weeks. During all that time, Abby took care of her sick mother, the chickens, the lights. Obviously, Abby was a smart and capable person, intelligent and moral. But her main characteristic that shines through for me is that she was a hard worker. She was unprepared in major ways for the tasks in front of her. She didn't always know what she was doing, but she didn't give up. She kept trying. I wouldn't have thought of it in this way at the time, but when I was presented with a hard situation in fourth grade, that I hadn't behaved kindly, and I wasn't sure what to do to make it right, I guess I gave up. Now, even though it's quite a few years later, I'm game to keep trying. With Abby as my role model, I think I'm gonna share this story with Caitlin. I'm not sure exactly what her reaction will be, but I have a feeling that like the fifth graders Dweck encouraged to keep trying, Caitlin and I might be able to experience